attorney, advocate, author, public speaker, The Lisa Wexler Show, WICC 600. Flip that switch and turn on your brain. Here is Lisa Wexler.
Hello and welcome to the show. We've got a next great hour for you. And incidentally, if you missed any part of today's show or if you want to rehear it or rehear yesterday's show, you can go on SoundCloud.com. It's very easy. And Christian uploads the show at the end of the day. He even describes it, takes the trouble to tell you who the guests are. So I'm very happy for you to have to do that as well on SoundCloud.com. Our telephone number, 203-333-9422 for the next hour. And at 11:30, we're going to be chatting with Luanda Lesseps, who you may know as the Countess, although I don't think she officially is one anymore. But you know what? A stage name is a stage name. It worked for her. And Luann is going to be at the Ridgefield Playhouse soon. And she happens to be a dear friend of my sister, Jill, because both of them were on the OG. They were the original Real Housewives of New York City. Luann was at BravoCon over the weekend. So we'll chat with her about her new singing career, which brings her back to Connecticut, her home state, at the Ridgefield Playhouse. And also, we want to go a little bit right now to the impeachment hearings at 203-333-9422. So let me just give you a little bit of the skinny because it'll be resuming shortly. So Gordon Sondland was testifying as of 9 o'clock this morning. And his relevance, the reason that he's so important, is because he is the person who is not only the ambassador to the EU, but who is talking about his actual conversations with President Trump. In other words, not hearsay. He had the conversations with the president, and in the absence of the president's own testimony, that kind of hearsay becomes the most relevant evidence the committee will have. And Gordon Sondland opened up his testimony this morning by complaining that he had not had a chance to review what it was that he said, the transcripts of phone conversations, the transcripts of meetings. And he said that in the absence of being able to review what it was he said, he really couldn't rely that his memory was going to be that accurate. And I have a lot of sympathy for that, don't you? I mean, I can barely remember what I did yesterday. I truly have to consult my calendar half the time. But our recollections of what we said and did are notoriously unreliable anyway. And that's why we have this construct at law, and you probably have heard this if you've watched television. May I show this to you to refresh your recollection? In other words, when a witness is on the stand, either in a deposition or any kind of a hearing, and they are asked to be reminded of something that they did or something that they said, and they don't really remember exactly what it is, their lawyer or the opposing counsel will show them, well, this is what you said or did. Does this refresh your recollection? And how many of us need our recollection refreshed? All of us do, all the time. So for Gordon Sondland, who's not an attorney, incidentally, to be complaining that he was not able to properly prepare for this testimony because the Democrats who are calling this hearing did not allow him to see the evidence that they saw about what he said or did. And I tell you the truth, I have a lot of sympathy for him. I think it was wrong. If you're going to question somebody and ask them to, in light of what happened, reconsider or, in other words, not reconsider in terms of change their mind, but literally consider again what it was they said or did in the moment, give somebody the courtesy of showing them the official transcripts of what it was that you're saying that they said. Because that will help them answer the questions in real time in context now. So I personally, you know, and then he went on in a very sort of nice cooperative way to go ahead and answer an awful lot of questions. But I think it gives us pause because I'm a very big process person. The words due process of law, which are ingrained in our Constitution and have an enormous amount of Supreme Court common law jurisprudence attached to them, are very real to me. I'm a big process. I care about process. The due process of law, to me, is very often as important as the substance of any particular case. Because if it isn't tried right, if it isn't treated correctly, if the people aren't given their adequate rights along the way, then how can you trust the ultimate outcome? How can you trust the outcome if people's rights along the way are not being respected? The due process of law. And it's in our Constitution for a reason. It really matters. And essentially what Gordon Sondland was saying was, look, you didn't give me a fair shake. You're going to be asking me about things I said, conversations in which I might have been a participant or witness, and you didn't even give me the evidence you have that I was there. I don't remember everything all that well. He's 62 years old. Gordon Sondland's another interesting story. His parents, listen to this. His parents fled the Nazis before the war, right before the war, as Jews, and they went to Uruguay. And his mother and father got separated. He was with his mother in Uruguay as a very young child. And then I think after the war, his parents were reunited. They got to this country. Gordon Sondland grew up in Seattle. In the 1980s, he bought his first hotel with a loan from his brother-in-law. He became an entrepreneur and a founder of a company called Provenance Hotels, which went on to own a bunch of hotels. He went on to become very civically active, both after he left Seattle in the state of Oregon, and ultimately was a very big fundraiser and supporter of President Trump. It's no secret since the beginning of time that very often ambassadors purchase their political appointments by giving freely and liberally to the person who ends up becoming president. That's as old as Ben Franklin. Not saying he did it, but it's as old as this country. And the reason Gordon Sondland was chosen to become the ambassador to the European Union was because it was thought that since his parents had fled Nazi Germany, he had a very real understanding of the world before and after World War II, and a very real commitment to democracy and freedom. And indeed, from what I read about him, Gordon Sondland got very high marks doing his job as the ambassador for the European Union, trying very hard to push against the Chinese cheating that goes on, the Chinese cheating in trade, the Chinese cheating in bribery, the Chinese cheating in general, and trying to reestablish good European Union partnerships with the United States. So the impeachment inquiry continues this morning. And this comes after a very long day yesterday, where there were four witnesses in total. Christian, I think we've got a clip from some of yesterday's. We've got some of yesterday's testimony. We have Kurt Volker. Now, there were two of the four witnesses, incidentally, were appearing for Republicans. The two in the afternoon were appearing for Republicans. The two in the morning were appearing for the Democrats. So let's hear what some of the witnesses said that were actually appearing for the Republicans. We've got Kurt Volker. And I know that it's here in front of me somewhere. I've got the audio somewhere. I've got too many pieces of paper in front of me. 203-333-9422. Here it is. No, that's not right. That's not right. That's the wrong one. All right, have we got a Christian? Let's hear. Let's hear from yesterday's witnesses. Tim Morrison is the other. Tim Morrison and Kurt Volker. I think Christian is trying to get the audio up, as we say. 203-333-9422 at 15 minutes after 11 o'clock. The House Intelligence Committee in Washington, D.C. resuming shortly. Let's hear the audio clips, and then we'll take your calls. If you're on the queue, please stay on. 203-333-9422, and we'll be with you in a moment.
Look, it's bad enough that the Democrats have forbidden White House lawyers from participating in this proceeding. It's hard enough to defend yourself without your lawyers present. But what's even worse is trying to defend yourself against an accusation that keeps changing in the middle of the proceeding. If Democrats accuse the president of a high crime or impeachable offense, he at least ought to know which one it is. And when Speaker Pelosi says this is all about bribery, she's promised us evidence of bribery that would be compelling and overwhelming, and instead, it's invisible. I yield back.
In hindsight, I now understand that others saw the idea of investigating possible corruption involving the Ukrainian company Burisma as equivalent to investigating former Vice President Biden. I saw them as very different, the former being appropriate and unremarkable, the latter being unacceptable. In retrospect, I should have seen that connection differently, and had I done so, I would have raised my own objections.
As I stated during my deposition, I feared at the time of the call on July 25th how its disclosure would play in Washington's political climate. My fears have been realized.
So what you just heard in sequence was Devin Nunes, who was the Republican ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee. But the second two audio clips you just heard were from the actual witnesses, Kurt Volker and Tim Morrison. And I think it's fair to say, as people are judging, that they didn't exactly come out strongly in favor of President Trump nor his behavior. I think what's extraordinary about this, just to keep in mind, and I remember I'm outside the Beltway, and we've been talking about process for a while. But Devin Nunes, as a member of this committee, is supposed to be tasked with having an open mind. Now, he is the ranking member. He's on record as being very supportive of President Trump. But the truth is, sitting in judgment, he's already made up his mind. He's already arguing and persuading. He might as well be counsel on behalf of President Trump. And from where I sit as a citizen in the United States, I would prefer that the people who are on this committee not argue. This is supposed to be about fact-finding. This is supposed to be about taking testimony. And this is supposed to be then about deliberating and deciding how they're going to vote. We already know, Mr. Nunes, how you're going to vote. Because you've already said that no matter what you hear, you're not going to be convinced that anything would lead you to judge harshly against the president. And personally, I think that's a shame. Because I think every person who sits on any commission anywhere should be doing so with an open mind. It's 18 minutes after 11 o'clock. We'll be right back. As the House Intelligence Committee remarks continue to resume and the politicians pontificate, Mr. Sondland still is not back on the stand, so there's no point in going live because I really don't want to hear the politicians pontificate any longer. But it is a nice alliteration. 203-333-9422. And in a few minutes, we're going to chat with Countess Luann de Lesseps, who is just Luann. And she grew up in Berlin, Connecticut, and she's coming on December 6th to the Ridgefield Playhouse to do her show, Christmas with the Countess. And you can actually have a VIP meet and greet. Tickets are available for that, too. BravoCon was sold out within 3 seconds. $1,700 a pop for the weekend. 3 seconds online. Boom, done. You think next year it'll be a little bigger? I do. This Roni franchise, it keeps going and going. So do a lot of the other Real Housewives, although it's hard to keep track of how many cities they're in. 203-333-9422 is the Lisa Wexler Show. Let's go to some news we may have missed. Well, okay. Have you heard the story about WeWork? We have to talk about this because we just have to, because it is just so stunning to me. So WeWork is a concept, was a concept, was this idea of people sharing workspace. And at one point, it was so considered so popular that it displaced a lot of traditional commercial tenants in commercial office buildings. And before it went public, you ready? Before it went public, they valued themselves at $47 billion. And they actually got a Japanese bank named SoftBank to lend them money based on a valuation of $47 billion. But it appears the emperor had no clothes, because when it was time for them to go public and Wall Street got real and looked at the books and looked at the revenues, they said $47 billion, maybe eight, maybe nine. By the way, still a lot of money. I wouldn't throw it away. But not 47. And SoftBank, which had loaned all this money, went in a panic. And they said, if we can't issue shares, if we can't sell paper on a value close to $47 billion, we're going to lose our shirts. And we don't want the founder, Adam Neumann of WeWork, to be in charge anymore, because we think, okay, we were willing to give him $47 billion or lend on the basis of it because we thought he was, you know, today's boy genius Bill Gates. But now we're not so sure. We lost confidence in Adam. We don't want him running the company anymore. If the company's only worth $8 billion and we're in for $47 or whatever we're in for, something close to that, we can't trust him to be in charge. So you know what we're going to do? And this actually happened. This happened in 2019 America. We're going to pay him $1.7 billion to buy his shares back to make sure he can't run the company. You listening to this? So the guy, Adam Neumann, who was responsible for being the best salesman on planet Earth, obviously the best, because he convinced this bank and others to think that his company was worth $47 billion when it wasn't, as a booby prize of not being able to run his company anymore, he gets $1.7 billion in actual cash, in real money, to walk away. You know, I saw that story. I had to read it again and again. I said to Bill, my husband, I said, what is wrong with this story? What is it? And this morning's news says that the New York State Attorney General's office is investigating Adam Neumann. You want to know why? Because now they're saying that he took the money. So all along, when he thought the value of his company was worth a lot, even though it wasn't publicly traded, it doesn't have to be worth money. He took some of that borrowing and he went ahead and he bought buildings and he leased the buildings back to WeWork. So he was the landlord and the tenant. A little conflict of interest there, especially when you're acting on behalf of your shareholders. That's the allegation anyway. So he's in trouble. There may be charges levied against him, but he's got plenty of money to pay his lawyers. Because in this wonderful world in which we live, even though SoftBank, this Japanese bank, is going to take a beating, who knows if they'll survive? It's not every bank that has the money, the wherewithal to loan 47 on the basis of a value of $47 billion. I don't know if they're in for 20, 25. They're in for a lot of money, in the billions. And they're in for so much that they wanted to buy Adam out. Now, you would think if they were smarter, I guess they didn't ask me, what do I know? That before paying somebody off $1.7 billion, they may want to see if that person was somehow at fault in terms of the valuation of before and after. Maybe they wouldn't have to pay him anything. Maybe there were other legal recourse where they could take over the management of the company on the basis of, I don't know, misrepresentation, maybe fraud. I don't know. They paid him $1.7 billion. So he's got plenty of money to pay lawyers. What a situation. That story of WeWork. And by the way, I saw this week they're laying off thousands of employees. There are thousands of people who signed up to work for this company believing it would be the next, you know, new .com fabulous extravaganza Silicon Valley success story. But it might be a lot of smoke and mirrors. WeWork might be a lot of smoke and mirrors. And you always wonder when we have these bubbles and they burst, boom, which are the companies that are real, that have a product whose valuation is relatively, you know, equivalent to the value that people are paying for it, and others that are just inflated, just completely inflated beyond belief. And it's the bubble. We saw it. I mean, you know, we've seen it ever since the tulips in the 1600s in Holland. It's not news. It's, you know, it's not just America. It's a boom and bust mentality. But the latest is WeWork, and what an example. 203-333-9422 on the Lisa Wexler Show. Let me give you some other news you may have missed. The Connecticut Tree Protective Association will plant a white oak tree in every city and town within Connecticut. Isn't that sweet? In honor of the 100th anniversary of the passage of Connecticut's arborist law, which requires that arborists in the state be licensed to be arborists and establishes the foundation for proper tree care. Because of this, they say that the knowledge and practice of tree care is noticeably better within the state of Connecticut than elsewhere in the country. And we are a state that clearly values our trees. The original arborist law was passed at a time when Connecticut's forests were still regrowing, and in which we had the gypsy moth and the chestnut blight, and they were rapidly becoming major tree problems. Now we have the lantern fly. We're going to have to watch about that. The lantern bug, the lantern something lantern, the lantern insect. In any event, when we had that terrible chestnut blight, It was then that the Connecticut Agricultural Experiment Station recognized a developing problem with hacks and charlatans selling tree care services, which were often no good. So they began to be accredited and they began to be licensed. And the first arborist law was called the Tree Expert Law. And it required anyone who sold their services as a tree expert to demonstrate their knowledge of trees. It's 11:30. I'm Lisa Wexler. We'll return with Luann de Lesseps. And she is formerly known as the Countess, but maybe always known as the Countess to her fans. She continues to be a member of the tribe of the Real Housewives of New York City. My sister, Jill Zarin, an OG member of that tribe. And we'll return to a conversation with her because she's coming to the Ridgefield Playhouse on December 6th. Don't miss it. Get your tickets now. It's sure to be sold out. We'll be right back.
Money can't buy your class. Money can't buy your class. Elegance is learned, my friends. Elegance is learned. Oh, yeah.
And that voice is one of the hits of our next guest, Luann de Lesseps, a Connecticut girl, if there ever was one, but she's gone on to international renown and television fame. Luann, what is it, the 13th or the 12th season of The Real Housewives of New York City? Welcome back to the show. Hi. What are we in?
Hi, Lisa.
Hi, sweetheart.
Hi, Lisa. We are season 12.
Season 12. I can't because it seems like yesterday. It seems like yesterday,
right?
Everybody was at my house and we were doing a
right.
lunch in Westport, and yeah, all of it,
uh-huh.
all of it,
all of it,
yeah,
all of it. And you're going to see your sister this season.
That's what I heard. I heard there's a Bravo teaser that came out of BravoCon. Is Jilly going to be back
uh-huh.
on?
Yes, I bring her back onto the show. Of course, you know how much I love her.
Yes, she loves you too. She loves you too.
I know.
So
I know.
And this,
it's so funny. I heard the ad for her carpets, and I have her carpets in my apartment in New York. And you know, I have a Westie who sometimes slips up. And let me tell you, I can clean that carpet easily because of the stain guard that she has on for those carpets she has, and they're phenomenal,
right? I mean, like phenomenal. I know. I can't believe it. I switched out all the rugs in my house because, you know, I've got a Bichon puppy now, and it's really like a lost cause, the whole thing with the house training. It's like impossible. But honestly, I don't sweat over it the way I used to because really I just clean it right up. It's a big deal. It's fantastic. Yeah. Luann, this is so exciting. First of all, I want to hear all about BravoCon for you. I missed you. I got there on Sunday, and I saw your very nice, like you had a whole nice, I don't know what you would call it, but on Union Square, you know, there was like a night, I think you were selling stuff or whatever. It was a nice.
There was a Bravo Bazaar, so I had a merch booth with my T-shirts and my candles and tote bags and things like that, and I stopped by the booth and I was signing, you know, things for my fans, and it was a crazy weekend. I performed on Sunday night. I did my cabaret show.
Nice, and that's what you're bringing to the Ridgefield Playhouse, December 6th.
That's what I'm bringing. Well, you know, that specifically was for BravoCon. I changed the show just specifically for that, and at Ridgefield, I'm doing a new Christmas show, which I love doing.
So tell us about your singing career. How did you learn to sing? When were you always singing, and what can people expect in Ridgefield?
Well, you know, it's funny because I have a dear friend I've known for 30 years, and he said to me, Luann, you love to host parties, you sing for your friends, and you tell jokes. You should be doing cabaret. And that's how the whole thing really started. I mean, I grew up in Connecticut. I had a passion for music, and I just, you know, sang songs that, you know, Peggy Lee and, you know, from Peggy Lee to Bonnie Raitt. I mean, my love affair with music is vast in terms of what I like to listen to. And so it started really with a passion just for singing. And then in Europe, when I was, you know, married and living in Europe, I would go to dinner parties and sing, you know, Marilyn Monroe songs. And, you know, so it's just been always a passion of mine. And then to be able to bring that passion to cabaret has been amazing. So I talk about my life. I tell stories from my diary. I tell housewives scoop, of course.
Of course.
And I sing some my classic songs, you know, Money Can't Buy You Class Live, and now Feelin' Giovanni, which I added to my live show. So it's always a different show in terms of, you know, what venue I'm playing. You know, I've been to Ridgefield last year, so I'm bringing an all-new Christmas show to Connecticut. And, you know, I'm excited. My family's coming, and I'm going to be back home.
So tell us a little.
Home court.
Exactly. So, Luann de Lesseps, so tell us a little of your story. How does a nice girl from Berlin, Connecticut, get to walk the international runways in Italy, and then your glamorous personal life ensues? You know, tell us a little bit about how you got from where you were to where you went as a young girl. I know you were a nurse, and that doesn't seem like a nurse and a model. They don't always seem like they go together. A nurse and
not really.
So you obviously right. So you obviously had these other ambitions and these other yearnings, even though you were, you know, highly educated and doing your thing in school.
Well, you know, I went to nursing school, and how I got to even New York, I'd never been to New York. I was 23. I'd never been to New York. I was the head nurse on a geriatric unit, and I had one of the girls who was my nurse's aide who wanted to go into the Miss Connecticut beauty pageant. She said, I won't go unless you come with me. So I got involved in the Miss Connecticut beauty pageant, and from there I got scouted to be a model in New York.
Oh.
And then I, you know, and then I heard about Europe, and I'd never been to Europe, and I said, oh, I want to go to Europe. Sure. And I discovered this whole world. I felt like, you know, Columbus. I was like, there's this whole universe that I didn't even know about.
Wow.
And I fell in love with Europe. I loved the European style. I was in Milan for 3 years. I became I got involved in television by accident. You know, modeling wasn't working for me. And I happened to, you know, meet somebody who was in television who said, you know, you should be a television host, et cetera. And I became the Vanna White of Italian television. And then went skiing one weekend in Switzerland and met the Count and became a countess, you know, it just happened just like that. You know, I think you have to take chances, be adventurous in life, take, you know, not be afraid. And, you know, one door opened another door and opened another door just to where I am. And until I met Jill Zarin, when I came back to New York after living in Europe for 12 years, I came back and I met your sister at a party. And she said, do you want to be on this new show called Manhattan Moms? I said, oh, what's that?
Right.
And television was my background. And this was just another form of television. But in reality, which I wasn't, you know, it was new.
Right.
And,
brand new.
And it was brand new. And here we are at season 12.
Yeah, it's really, and the journey of the 12 years with the Housewives has been quite a journey too.
I mean,
that's, you know, I just want to know, Luann, because, you know, you've exposed yourself. A choice to be on a reality show is a choice to expose yourself.
Yeah.
And
right.
I think maybe in years one and two, it's fair to say maybe the women didn't know what they were signing up for. But by the time you got to season four or five, you knew that what they want is they want conflict and they want drama. And I have a few questions about that for me, Luann. We're chatting with Luann de Lesseps. Do you think that being on The Housewives, either consciously or unconsciously, causes you to create drama in your life so that you can have it on TV?
Well, it's not, it has never been in my case, you know, but, you know, things that you normally maybe wouldn't be that upset about is kind of exaggerated a bit because, you know, it is a TV show, and not to say that it's scripted, because it's not, it's totally unscripted, and what happens happens. It's, you know, an edited, produced television show. But what happens between us and me and the women is that everybody's got a big personality on the show. They cast it very well. You know, like your sister, you know, she was such a huge character on the show. And it's like, I call it my discombobulated housewife family. I grew up one of seven.
I know.
And where am I? I'm on a show with seven women.
Yeah.
How does that happen?
I don't know.
Isn't that funny? I mean, and I learned to navigate my family at a young age. Like, you have all these different personalities, and you have to stroke one's ego, and you have to be nice to that one to get what you want, and et cetera. So I always say that my family helped prepare me for The Housewives in a weird way. And The Housewives, you know, it's my discombobulated Housewives family. At the end of the day, we have to sit down at the Thanksgiving table and have dinner, you know?
And do you still? Would you say that that's true now? Because for a while, there was some bleeding from the personal to the professional to the personal. Nowadays, do you think of it in a compartmentalized way, like, you know, this is the part of my working life, and if there's drama on the screen, so be it, but there doesn't need to be drama off screen?
That's right. Yeah. I compartmentalize. I always have. You know, it's funny because Jill would get the show in the very beginning and say, oh, my God, let's go home and watch it tonight.
Right.
And I would say to her, oh, no. I want to sleep well. I am not watching that show tonight. I'll deal with that in the morning. I've always kept it, try to keep it very separate from my life, but it's very difficult because, you know, it's the reality of your life. So, you know, it comes with a lot of challenges and a lot of tightrope walking, I call it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a hard balance, but you have to balance. Otherwise, you know.
We're chatting with Luanda Lesseps, who's going to be at the Ridgefield Playhouse for the Christmas show, for her own Christmas show, December 6th. And you know how to get your tickets at the Ridgefield Playhouse. It's easy peasy. 203-333-9422. Call me at 203-333-9422.
Why don't we give some tickets away?
I would love to if we can. We gave away a pair last week. If we've got your permission, I'm good with it. I'd love to give tickets away. Are you kidding? I'd love to give more tickets away. We gave away a pair of tickets last week. We were delighted to. The marketing gal, Lisa, that's what she gave me authority for. If you think I can give away more, I will. We'd love to, Luann. You tell me.
I'm going to, because you're doing this to me today, I'm going to give two tickets for more fans to come and see my show.
That's wonderful. All right, so we got two more pair of tickets. Marvelous. So we're going to give away two more pair of tickets at 203-333-9422. And I usually make them earn it, Luann. I usually make them earn it with a trivia question. Should we give a trivia question to the audience?
Well, do that, Lisa.
All right,
let's see.
Let's give a good one. All right, so who would like to win a pair of tickets? They're already calling. 203-333-9422. Let's make it an easy one. Who is the host of Watch What Happens Tonight, who is obsessed with all of the housewives? Let's see if you know. We'll go to, we've got Barry. Barry, is that Barry on the line?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Barry. Welcome to the show. You're on with Luann. Hello.
Oh, good day, Luann. That's scary. I'm driving and I hit my button and you come up and you know me and I know you.
Okay. Hello?
Yes. Can you hear me?
I can, but I'm not sure we have Luann still on. I think... do we not have Luann, Christian? What happened to our guest? Uh-huh. Well, let's see if we can get her back. Barry, can you tell me, do you know who the host is of Watch What Happens Tonight? Who's the gentleman who's obsessed with all the housewives?
I'm sorry, I do not.
You do not? Oh, I'm sorry, Barry. I can't give you a pair of tickets. I'm sorry about that. So, did you have a question for Luann?
No, I wanted to call about the tickets. I wanted to say something, but it was off. It's off the topic, so... I'll try again some other time.
I would appreciate that. Thank you so much. We'll be right back. We'll come back with Luann de Lesseps. We'll be right back. And we're expecting to hear back from Luann de Lesseps, but let's go to our callers first to see if we can give away those two pair of tickets. Very easy question. Let's go first to Carol. Hey, Carol, welcome to the show today. Carol? Hello, Carol. You on? Hello, Carol. Is Carol on the air? Hello, Carol, you there? Hi, Carol.
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, sweetheart.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. Hi. So tell me, who is the guy who presides over the housewife reunions, who's obsessed with the housewives?
It's got to be Andy Cohen.
It's got to be. Congratulations, Carol. You got a pair of tickets. So congratulations. You're going to go to Luann's concert on December 6th?
Oh, for sure. I'm so excited. I watch all the housewives.
Do you? Is your favorite original one Jill Zarin? Say yes.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And me and my daughter were just talking about her rugs the other day.
Aren't they phenomenal? Do you know yet? Have you bought them yet?
We've been looking into it.
All right. Well, look into it. Listen, if you do I Love Lisa, you're going to get another 10% off.
All right. Very good to know.
So don't forget about the promotion. I Love Lisa as the promotion. You get another 10% off, okay?
Okay, great. And I can't wait to see Luann.
Okay, I can't wait for you to see Luann. So thank you very much, Carol. I'll tell her. That's wonderful. All right, we got a bunch of other calls, but I'm hoping that we're going to be hearing from Luann. I know Christian's been trying her back. I don't know what happened that we got some technical difficulties. It's 1148, 203-333-9422. We've got another pair of tickets to give away. Luann wants to give away one more pair of tickets to her Christmas concert, which is December 6th at the Ridgefield Playhouse. So I'll give you one more trivia question. I think this one is so easy, but okay. Here's another trivia question. Who is another, or should I just make it the easy one? Who is the original housewife? Who is the original housewife of New York City? Who is my sister? What's her name? 203-333-9422. We'll give a little props to my sister because she doesn't have the same last name as I do anymore. Who is the original Real Housewife of New York City? Who is my sister? And if you can tell me that, we'll give you two tickets to a Real Housewives of New York City Christmas show that is going to be hosted and sung by Luann de Lesseps December 6th at the Ridgefield Playhouse. So 203-333-9422 for that. It is about 10 minutes before the hour. And Christian, are you still trying to get Luann back on? I don't know what's happening. In the meantime, as we turn from the serious to the sublime, or we turn from the sublime to the serious, or we turn from the silly. We have right now in the House Intelligence Committee, we go back and forth between real life and not real life. But we've got callers on. Let's get to the callers. But in what's happening in Washington, D.C. right now is the Gordon Sondland is continuing to be questioned right now by Steve Castor, the Republican counsel. Gordon Sondland, the U.S. ambassador to the European Union, whose testimony many have thought has been the most important in these impeachment hearings, because he is the person who said that he directly spoke with the president. So 203-333-9422 is our number. And once again, one more trivia question for you. Who is my sister? Who is the original, the OG, as they call them, Real Housewife of New York City? And as the calls are lining up, we'll take them. And hopefully we'll give you another. We've got another Carol. This Carol from Southbury. Hi, Carol. We've got two Carols in a row. Carol, what's my sister's name? What's my sister's name?
Bethany Frankel?
No, honey, that's not my sister. That was the gal who had a very famous but long in the past feud with my sister. Let me give you one more chance. Who did Bethany Frankel feud with? Do you remember?
I don't know. No, I don't know.
Oh, Carol, I feel like I want to give you the tickets. Are you a Real Housewives fan?
Just occasionally. That's why I don't know all the names.
But would you like to go to Luann's concert?
I would love to.
All right. I'm going to give you the tickets. You're such a sweetheart for participating.
Oh, thank you.
My sister's name is Jill Zarin.
Oh, of course.
With the red hair.
Yes.
And
yes, yes.
She was one of them. She used to call herself Mama Jill. She gave a lot of advice, and she had a good time on the show. She was on for the first 4 years.
Oh, my goodness. I should have known that.
That's all right, honey. I'm glad you called in. Thank you for listening. So stay on the line.
You.
We'll get your email. We'll get your phone, and we'll make sure you go to see Luann's concert, okay?
Thank you so much.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you for calling. Thanks for listening. It's 8 minutes before the hour. Well, we hope that Luann will be connected with us. I know Christian is frantically trying, but if not, it was an all-too-brief interview. Maybe we'll get her back on the show to keep it up. Let me give you some other news that you may have missed. You know, I never run out of things to say. Actually, you know what I'd like to do? Gordon Sondland is speaking right now. These impeachment hearings are of great national import. So let's just go directly to them for a bit.
I think Secretary Perry asked to use the ward room to continue the conversation. And the real subject that was under debate, and it wasn't a angry debate, it was a debate, is should the call from President Trump to President Zelensky be made prior to the parliamentary elections in Ukraine or after the parliamentary elections? And there was good reason for both. We felt, Ambassador Perry, Ambassador Volker, and I thought it would help President Zelensky to have President Trump speak to him prior to the parliamentary elections, because it would give President Zelensky more credibility. And ultimately, he would do better with his people in the parliamentary elections. Others, I believe, pushed back and said, no, it's not appropriate to do it before. It should be done after. And ultimately, it was done after.
Okay. There was no mention of Vice President Biden in the ward room?
Not that I remember, no.
Or any specific investigation?
Just the generic investigations.
Okay.
Yeah.
When again did the Vice President Biden nexus come to your attention?
Very late. Again, I can't recall the exact date the light bulb went on. It could have been as late as once the transcript was out, but it was always Burisma to me, and I didn't know about the connection between Burisma and Biden.
And to the best of your knowledge, you never understood that anyone was asking Ukrainians to investigate U.S. persons, correct?
Ukrainians to investigate U.S. persons?
Right.
No.
Okay.
No.
And just to sort of be clear here, ultimately the aid was lifted on September 11th. There was never any announcement by the Ukrainians about any investigations they were going to do, correct?
Correct.
The Ukrainians never, to your knowledge, started any of these investigations, correct?
Not to my knowledge.
Consequently, these allegations that there was a quid pro quo that had to be enforced before the aid was released, and it never came to fruition, right?
I don't believe so.
Okay. I want to just step back a little bit and just verify with you that
these are live impeachment hearings. Steve Castor, Republican counsel,
about corruption in Ukraine, correct?
Is asking questions of Gordon Sondland, the U.S. ambassador to the European Union.
You believed him, right, given his business dealings in the region?
When we had the conversation, I did.
And when you first started discussing the concerns the president had with corruption, Burisma wasn't the only company that was mentioned, right?
It was a generic, as I think I testified to Chairman Schiff, it was a generic corruption, oligarchs, just bad stuff going on in Ukraine.
But other companies came up, didn't they?
I don't know if they were mentioned specifically. It might have been Naftogaz because we were working on another issue with Naftogaz, so that might have been one of them.
At one point in your deposition, I believe you said, yeah, Naftogaz comes up at every conversation. Is that fair?
Probably. Okay.
You had, Dr. Hill at one point attributed to you the terminology that the president has given you a large remit. You familiar with her assertion of that?
I didn't understand what she was talking about.
Okay. But you have, and we got into this a little bit in your deposition, you said that the president gave you a special assignment with regard to Ukraine, correct?
Well, when the president appointed me to the U.S., as the U.S. ambassador to the European Union, Ukraine was part of my portfolio. What made my assignment larger than just being part of my portfolio were the unique circumstances where there was no current sitting ambassador in Ukraine, and there was a new president in Ukraine. And the discussions that we had, the three amigos, Perry, Volcker, and I, was that Ukraine needed extraordinary, as high-level support as it could get from the United States during this period, which we cleared with both Ambassador Bolton and with Chief of Staff Mulvaney to continue working on it. So by extension, yes, if the National Security Advisor and the Chief of Staff approve your remit, it really is coming from the President.
Okay. When we asked you that at the deposition, you said I was spinning a little bit. Correct?
I was spinning about something else, I think, in the interview in Kyiv.
Okay. And you further testified.
So that's a little bit of the testimony. That's live right now. If you want to continue listening, you can on C-SPAN, where the interview is being broadcast live from the House Intelligence Committee. And that was Steve Castor, Republican counsel, going over the testimony of Gordon Sondland, who had already been questioned by Adam Schiff. In the meantime, in other news you may have missed, the face mask ban was ruled unconstitutional by Hong Kong's highest court. ruling that an emergency law banning protesters from wearing face masks, which has become synonymous with the protests rocking the city, is unconstitutional. So they've got a judge in there with some guts in Hong Kong. The high court said the stricture was incompatible with the Hong Kong Constitution, adding the restrictions it imposes on fundamental rights go further than is reasonably necessary and therefore fail to meet the proportionality test. So right now in the Senate, there is a bill that is looking that it may be signed by President Trump. I'm not sure, but it's making its way through our Congress that supports the Hong Kong protesters. China is already saying that they object and that if America passes the bill, it will be bad for our relations. But there is a sense within our own Washington, D.C. representatives that we need to do more than just lip service. We need to do something very real in support of the people who are protesting for freedom in Hong Kong. I'm Lisa Wexler. We'll be back behind the mic tomorrow with another great show. If you missed any part of this, we had a wonderful conversation with a trauma specialist. We had a little bit of a conversation with Luann de Lesseps, a housewife, and lots more we talked about today. So listen to it on SoundCloud.com tonight, and we'll be back behind the mic tomorrow.